Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Roadshow.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are so glad you're back here with us. Scott's playing air piano for us right now. His fingers are dazzling. Hey! Got quite a crowd outside the window here.
More beautiful people. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us. We'd love for you to join the conversation. Log on to facebook.com/themusicrowshow and chat alongside with us. And remember, you can always listen to past shows by clicking the podcast page of themusicrowshow.com.
What's so funny?
Nothing. Uh-huh. We're really past shows.
Yes. There's a bunch more coming up. Hey, you know, you can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at The Music Row Show, and you can chime in with any questions you might have right there.
Whoa. And we do want to say we just had a great time with Greg, and he mentioned to us, and we forgot to say something, that he's going to be over at Douglas Corner November 12th. Is that
all right?
So go see him over there. And now, Hino, why don't you tell us about this fine gentleman sitting here with us?
I would love to. Our guest here this hour, we visited with him very briefly a month or two ago at the Smoky Mountain Songwriters Festival.
Yeah, that was fun.
And he was originally supposed to come in a couple weeks ago to visit with us. We had a little snafu, and he graciously agreed to come back tonight. So we're so glad to welcome Max T. Barnes to the show tonight. He's an award-winning songwriter. He had his very first number one at the ripe old age of 19 with his dad, Max D. Barnes, Vern Gosden's Way Down Deep. So I guess you could kind of say that it was in his blood. Since then, Max had his songs recorded by so many artists, people ranging from George Jones to Alabama, Jody Messina, Montgomery Gentry. Heck, even the rock band Poison recorded one of his songs, which is amazing. He's had a total of 9 number one songs, including Before You Kill Us All by Randy Travis, That's How Your Love Makes Me Feel for Diamond Rio, and of course, the classic Love Me for Colin Ray. We are so happy to say, Max T. Barnes, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Thank you, fellas.
All right.
I know, Scott. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you, and we're out of time, but man, it was great having you here. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Get on in that mic. We want to hear everything you have to say. Yeah. It's hard to discuss Max T without talking about Max D. Some of country's biggest hits were written by your dad. Talk about growing up in that house and how he influenced you as a writer.
Well, my dad, Max D, he's my hero and my standard as a songwriter and a man and all that kind of thing. And growing up, I didn't realize how crazy it was growing up in our house till I met my wife, and she's from an Air Force family, and she said, "You guys are crazy." I tell her, because my mom and dad were both gigging. They were both singers and entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a little boy, and we moved down here to Nashville in 1973. And my dad would go do gigs, and he'd wake me up at 3 in the morning when he got back, and we'd make little pizzas, and you know, we were best buddies, and me and my mom and dad were really close, and we wrote together a lot, and it was a great way to grow up with in a musical family, and just the people I got to be around during my life. I look back on it now, I'm in my early 50s, and I think it sounds like a dream. It sounds like, you know, I was sitting there once with, you know, playing guitar with Merle Haggard at my dad's kitchen table, stuff like that. Yeah. I got reams of stories like that. And looking back on it, it's like, wow, that was amazing. It's a great way to grow up.
And you had no idea that it was anything special as a kid.
Well, I did. I mean, we're talking when I was a young man, but I did. But, you know, you take it with a grain of salt when you're living it. But looking back, it was, you know, it's still real special, because I'm still as much a country music fan as anybody.
Right.
And my dad was too. And he never really got over it. Like, he'd pull me aside and go, "Can you believe what's going on?" You know, so it was neat. It was a neat way to grow up.
Man, wow. That's cool. Well, you know, most kids are, you know, around the house. "Hey, look at me. Watch me. Look what I just did." Well, how nerve-wracking was it for you to have such an amazing songwriter as a dad, and you started showing him your compositions, your music, as you were kind of learning how to do that?
Well, if you imagine your own relationship with your own dad, it's just like that. he was, you know, Mac D. Barnes to the world, but he was just my dad to me, so uh-huh. it wasn't like that at all. And I was a ham when I was a little kid because my mom was really outgoing and my dad, you know, he was, you know, a singer-songwriter and stuff. So we just, we had a lot of fun. And, you know, somebody asked me, it was, gosh, maybe just a few months ago, they said, on one of these interviews, they said, well, what did it feel like growing up in the shadow of Mac D. Barnes? At our house, there was no shadow. And I never really thought of it that way, you know. I guess I always thought a child actors would grow up that way if their dad was famous. But it wasn't like that because he was just my dad, you know.
Right.
That's how it was.
Well, how about just songwriting technique and craft-wise, were there some things that he influenced you with or that he gave you advice or helped you along with? I mean, what... I'm just kind of wondering what that would be like. You know, neither of my folks were songwriters, so there was never any, you know, on that, if you'd move that chorus to the pre-chorus or anything like that.
Yeah, my dad never put forth any advice like that, but he was an example. And the biggest example that I could tell you that has influenced me was simple. And he wrote like he talked.
Mm-hmm.
And he would, you know, we'd sit there and, like, one song that comes to mind that he and I wrote for, we wrote it, and then Montgomery Gentry cut it on their first record, and Alabama also cut that song. It's called a song called I've Loved a Lot More Than I've Hurt. And we sit there, and we, you know, I want to say all the stuff, so I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And he'd just say a few words, and that would fill out the whole line, you know. He was just a few words per line, and he could do it better than anybody. So simplicity was his key. That's what he was best at. That's what I learned from him.
Hmm. Wow. But simplicity, but still saying all that.
Absolutely. I mean, he could say it without saying it, and it's a tough trick. It is.
Yeah. Man, oh, man. Well, when you started going out there on your own and being a songwriter in your own right, what kind of what did you experience from the industry? I mean, was there any sort of shadow in that respect in terms of, oh, here comes, you know, famous songwriter's kid, or were you treated as your own person?
I think, you know, Nashville's a great place to do what we do. It's not like LA and New York, from what I'm told.
Right.
Because everybody's just so helpful. And I'm sure that the goodwill of who my dad was, more of a person, because he was really jovial and friendly. And I still have people coming up saying, you know, your dad was the first one to help me out. And I love hearing those stories. Mm. But just, you know, just the goodwill that he earned, I guess, shed on me. And it was great. You know, I had my hard times and I got told no as much as anybody. But, you know, it was great. I had some great doors open for me. And, you know, I was blessed that I could, you know, keep my big foot in the door for a while. And it worked out.
Awesome.
Well, and you kind of started out... playing guitar too, and talk about those years touring the world and playing guitar with folks like Bobby Bear and Tanya Tucker. How does a bird's eye view of the audience and looking at what songs work and everything on stage, how does that help teach you about songcrafting?
Well, one of the things, I was a lead guitar player, so one of the things I really noticed was when you had a hit song, like I was out with Skip Ewing, and he was real hot at the time. We were out doing the No Fences tour with Garth Brooks, and we come out there, and we do our 20 minutes in front of Garth Brooks, and it was right when he was just at the top at that stage. And I'd come out and do this opening lick to this song, and it was just huge on these, you know, 20,000 people auditorium. And I know it's like this lick makes the people go, wah, because they know the song. So that really taught me a lesson that the opening lick, I mean, we're kind of inside baseball in the songwriting thing right here, but the opening lick is as important as a bunch of the rest of the song, because that identifies your brand right there. It's like, this is what's coming. It's a pretty important thing.
Hmm. Man. It's like, what was the song? Do you remember?
No.
But do you remember the lick?
Yeah. I said, near, near, near. Yeah, I could play it for you. But Holding My Heart was that one.
Okay.
I think it went to number 5 for Skip Ewing.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And then what about just, I don't know. I know there's a lot of stories you can't tell, but just touring with
well,
people
not
like
dirty,
Tanya.
Like Greg's stories.
What kind of things do you remember when you look back at touring with Bobby and with Tanya? And
oh, just some, well, you know, just funny stories. you know, I can tell some of them and I can't tell some of them. Yeah, okay. You know, I wouldn't want Bobby Bear to tell stories on me.
That's true.
Now Bobby Bear is just one of the greatest guys ever. You know, I'll tell you, I'll think of one at the break. Okay. And I'll come up with
all right. We'll come back with that.
We'll clean it up and then you tell it. Yeah. That's funny. Well, you did quite a bit of work as a producer along the way. How did you learn that part of the whole process, and what was the hardest part of that to master?
Producing is the funnest thing you can do. You guys know when you go in and you cut demos, that's the fun part, right?
Yeah, for me.
Not so much for me. No? It's my least favorite
really?
Part.
Yeah. To me, it's my favorite. And we're all made different, you know? Right. So
we can just leave him part out of this part of the conversation.
So it's the fun. It's where the magic happens, right? And either they fly or they fall. So I guess out of doing, you know, I've been a staff writer for just about 30 years and just I've done a jillion demos. So that's kind of where I got it from, just being in there and around it. And I remember like the song of my dad's, I remember the day he was in the studio. I was not even a teenager yet. And he'd cut the song called Thank God for the Radio, which went on to be a number one for the Kindles.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan Jackson also cut it. But I remember being in the studio when they demoed that and the licks and the smell of the studio and everything, just everything about it. I just loved the studio. And I knew then, I think I was 12 or 13, this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in the studio with those funny guys, those musicians who are just brilliant. I wanted to be around that. So,
right.
So ever since I, you know, got a little success writing songs, I was always trying to be in the studio, and I just love producing. I produced Rodney Atkins, kind of just before he hit big, and Jeff Carson. We did some stuff. Did an album with him, Smoking Armadillos. This was when I was at Curb Records. I was there for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm. So what, when you're producing different types of acts, how do you, what are some techniques that you use to help get the most out of them and not make it like a, you know, like a Jeff Lynne album? They all sound like Jeff Lynne.
They pretty much do. Yeah.
And no matter who he's producing, it sounds like Jeff Lynne.
He's got a sound as a producer.
When you're doing Rodney Atkins or Smoking Armadillos, how do you go about helping them find their voice?
To me, they bring who they are, if you listen. Rodney Atkins knew kind of what he wanted to do. And sometimes, you know, it's as quirky as, you know, this one, I won't tell you who just because I wouldn't want to tell stories, but there was this one singer I worked with, a major act, and they just kind of had trouble, you know, getting the lyrics out. And we finally just laid down, you know, the big hunk of foam in the studio that you put between this and that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it laid that down and made the mic where he could just lay there and sing it. And it actually really worked because he just couldn't relax enough to get it out. And you'd think, you know, people who worked that much in the studio would have a different take. But that was kind of my trick is whatever it took is what we did.
So he was lying on his back?
He was
on the ground?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, you know, I know it sounds weird. But just whatever it takes.
Interesting.
I don't mean whatever it takes, fellas.
Okay. I mean a full service producer. All right.
We don't judge here, but we do need to take a break and recover from this. We are back in just a few minutes with the great Max T. Barnes. You're listening to the Music Row Show. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That, of course, is Randy Travis doing Before You Kill Us All. Great song by our guest here this hour, Max T. Barnes.
You know,
I love that baritone guitar in there. That just is so cool.
I love this song. I love the way he sings it. I love the lyrics. One of the corniest videos I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I didn't write the video. I just write the words in the music part.
Yeah, just that part.
Well, you're all strapped up here with the guitar. You mind playing us a song?
I'd love to.
Okay.
You know, I was Greg's from the last hour. He's in the studio with us, and I thought to myself riding in, and he's so funny, and I really enjoyed hearing him riding in. But I used to write for Ray Stevens. I wrote with him for a couple of years, and that was a great experience. He's so smart, and he's just, you know, comedians are, I'd say. I mean, you don't meet dumb comedians, right?
Right.
Or songwriters, for that matter. So, you know, he was so brilliant, and he'd say, write me a song about this, or do that, or here's what's happening. And he, you know, I'd write it, and he'd go right down the hall and cut it. He's got a massive complex there.
He does, like, 4 or 5 albums a year.
You know, when I was there, and I think he's just about done with it, but he's always working on about 3 albums, 3 mm-hmm. projects. And, I mean, you know, some of us don't even buy green bananas. You don't know how much time we got left,
yeah.
right? But
yes,
he
true.
Is. And the last thing he was working on was the 100 funniest comedy songs
right.
of all times.
Right.
I mean, you go, that's ambitious, go cut 100 songs.
Yeah.
That's a big project. You don't even like to be in the studio. How would you like to cut 100 songs? So, you know, it was fun working around him. And I was thinking, here's a song that I'd like to play. And I'll probably crater it because Greg's in the room. But this is one I wrote I'll do a little bit of this one I wrote for Ray Stevens. It's kind of a true story. My daughter had a little clog in her sink, and I went up to the Ace Hardware to try to get a piece for it. And I saw somebody, and he gave me a hug, and I thought, you know, do we have to hug everywhere? Come on, guys. You know, like, is that what it's come to? I remember when I was a kid, men used to handshake. So
yeah.
It goes something like this. I was purchasing a pipe wrench and a P-trap when I got bear hugged by a guy I barely knew. And he hung on a little long. It was awkward, it was wrong. Let's stop hugging when a handshake will do. I ain't saying that it's wrong to show emotion. Kissing cheeks in France, well, that may not be taboo. But in your hometown hardware store, I gotta tell you, less is more. Guys, let's stop hugging when a handshake will do. But there's a time and a place to share and embrace, like when your brother comes home from the army, or you ain't seen your dad in a year or two. Yeah, times like that are fine, but it's time we draw the line. Guys, let's stop hugging when a handshake will do. Oh, let's stop hugging when a handshake will do. Hoss, holster that hug, a handshake will do.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, was that your poison cut?
No. No, then I wrote the shortest song I ever wrote for Ray Stevens. It was a... This here's a solar-powered song. 'Cause energy from oil, I'm told, is wrong. I'm unplugging from the grid. Let's all sing along. This concludes the solar-powered song.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, man.
That's beautiful. You know, I'd like to, if I can, I'm going to make that song a shout out to our friend, Listener Jerry.
Listener Jerry.
Who was let me know today that he was going to be listening, and he listens all the time, so that was awful nice.
Sweet. Hey, Jerry.
So right. There we go. So seriously, though, let's talk about this poison cut.
Yeah, how did that happen?
Well, when you say poison cut, what I did was I did a whole... who's the guy I'm thinking of?
Engelbert Humperdinck.
No, not
okay.
that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Brett Michaels. Oh, Brett Michaels, some years ago, he came to town and he bought a house out there. And it was kind of in Bordeaux, and he had a big old kind of a mansion on a hill. And he decided he was going to do a movie. And a friend of mine, Jim Faraci, who was a producer, and actually he mixed the Rat Records and produced them too. So
nice.
He was a guy from L.A., and we became fast friends. And he said, you know, you'd be perfect for writing this thing with my buddy Brett Michaels. And I said, sure. Well, I went out there and met him, and he was doing a movie at the time, this Letter from Death Row. And he had me do the whole score for that movie. So that's my brush with greatness with Brett Michaels and Poison.
Wow.
It had
Charlie Sheen and Martin Sheen in it.
And what was that project all about? And you scored it, like the actual...
Yeah, you know, it took about 2 weeks, if I remember right. It was like sitting in a studio like this with a big TV monitor,
yeah,
and making all sorts of neat noises and and coming up with songs for it and musical passages and that kind of thing. It was real fun.
Man.
It was a lot of fun.
So was that the one and only film that you've scored, or did you go on to do other ones?
That was the one and only one that I got to do all by myself. I've had songs in movies.
Right, right.
That's the one. That's the one I got to put my hands on. That was really neat.
Wow, very cool.
Very nice.
We were all in Ireland around the same time this year. We were there for the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival. Talk about your tour and just the general reception for country music across the Atlantic.
Oh, goodness. You know the answer to this question. People in Ireland love country music.
They really do.
They really do.
Yeah.
And they're different from us in that they could tell you who played on it and who wrote it, who published it, and what they ate for lunch.
Yeah,
you know,
they were wearing.
And the thing about Ireland, it's beautiful and all, but the people are just fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was on the tour. It was about a 30-day tour I did with a friend of mine, Craig Curtis. He and I went over there and run around singing my hits and my dad's hits, and we did some country favorites too. And people over there are just so helpful. We went one morning after a concert, I went to a grocery store just to look around, and the guy said, hey, I saw you at the show last night, in his Irish accent, I won't butcher it, but he said, you know, what you'd probably like is a song about our little town here, and it's like a town of 1,000 people. He goes, my sister wrote it, and he said, well, let me get the lyrics for you. He goes, let me get the tape. He goes, I don't have the tape, let me call my sister, and got a sister on the phone, and she couldn't get it, so he goes, well, don't worry, I'll drive over and get it. So he left. I mean, I walked down the street. You know, he was on his way to get this song for me. And next time I saw him, he was driving by and said, I don't have a cassette player. I'm going to call my brother-in-law. Just hang on. I mean, they love music. They love it.
That's awesome. So what song of yours seems to go over biggest with European audience? Is that different from what is here?
Absolutely. Now, that's a great question. When I got over there, I thought, bingo, I thought, you know, between my father and I, we've had 33 number ones and hits, and sold. My dad sold 50 million records. I've sold 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, they're going to know our stuff, and they're such country music fans. Well, we get over there, and they really haven't really heard anything. They've heard my song, Love Me, and they really didn't know much of my dad's stuff except for a song called You're Going Out the Same Way You Came In by their big country music artist, Big Tom. So those two songs got us through the tour. And
wow.
You'd think that, you know, and I found this out in Australia, too, that they have their own artists. They, in Australia, they do not know who George Jones is, and they don't know who Merle Haggard is.
Really?
What?
Yes. Can you believe that?
No.
Yeah, well, I'm never going back there. No, that's not true. They just have their own thing. And we Americans, you know, I guess we think it's all about us, and it kind of is to a degree, but they have their own world down there. They have their own artists, and really good artists, too.
Well, can you play us a little bit of the song that Big Tom did?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Now, this was a hit for Big Tom. It was like, it's like Friends in Low Places over there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's a, this is one my dad wrote, and I remember, I'm going to try to remember it all. Well, you're going out the same way you came in. It don't matter who you know or where you've been. Makes no difference who you are, Skid Row Joe or Superstar. Yeah, you're going out the same way you came in. We're all born into this world without a thing. and we leave it just as naked as we came. You may drive a coupe de ville, own a mansion on a hill, but that don't matter when St. Peter calls your name. 'Cause you're going out the same way you came in. Someone will notify your next of kin. Some will weep and some will moan. Some will spit upon your stone. But you're going out the same way you came in. Now this song, they never heard this verse, and when I whooped it on them, they were floored. But my dad wrote this song by himself, and he wrote it for himself. He was real clever. And this is a verse that Big Tom didn't cut, but I remember doing the demo, and this is how it goes. Well, a friend of mine was on a lucky streak. He won $1.5 million in just a week. But it left him so high strung, he crashed his car, bit off his tongue. Guess you could say he passed away, tongue in cheek. Oh, you're going out the same way you came in. It don't matter who you know or where you've been. Makes no difference who you are, Skid Row Joe or Superstar. Yeah, you're going out the same way you came in. Yeah, you're going out the same way you came in.
Oh, man.
That's fun. That was a lot of fun to do.
I bet.
Man, oh, man. Well, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break? We're going to come back with a whole lot more of Max T. Barnes here on the Music Row Show.
Hey,
and we should tell you that our sponsor this segment is Toyota of Cool Springs. As you know, Scott and I are both Toyota drivers, and we really love that dealership.
That's right. And not only do they have great deals, but they've just been around for a long time. They have amazing experience. I love the fact they have a lifetime warranty with unlimited time and miles on every new car, a 3-day exchange policy, and unlike many other dealerships, they're just low-key. You don't know this, but Jen and I actually went in there yesterday.
Oh, sweet.
And again, we walk in and nobody's jumping us. It was just very, very low key. And hey, how's it going? And
yeah,
I loved it.
That's awesome. Toyota of Cool Springs. Ask for George, the owner. He'll take real good care of you on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
That's right. We're going to.
I read a note my grandma wrote back in 1923.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music
grandma
Row Show.
Kept it in,
you know that song. That's a song called Love Me, Colin Ray. And that's that beautiful tune was written by Max T. Barnes and Skip Ewing.
Love, comma, me.
Love, comma, me. Not to be confused with the other song. Love Me.
Right, Katrina?
Oh, man.
Is that a limerick?
No, we were trying to find it in the system. It's not here. Then we found it. Love, comma, me. Oh,
that made all the difference right there.
Love me.
So, you know, you do a lot of workshops for folks, and I've heard that, you know, a lot of times you can learn more by teaching somebody something than you can sit in a class learning something. What do you get out of being in the teacher role when you're doing workshops and classes?
It takes me back to when I was starting, and the one question I always get is, what do you do about writer's block?
And I
just don't think about that. I'm just like, blah, I got ideas and stuff. Not that they're all good. It's just more of a filter. And the one thing that I've learned from that and from those students and stuff is because I had to think about it. And really, because I never really put my finger on it about how I did it. I just did it. And the one thing that I came up with, and it's so true, is I kind of put ideas in the slow cooker of my mind. I put them back there and let them just go overnight or 2 days. And then it's kind of like if you ever said, who was that guy who was in that movie with the thing about the stuff and the guy?
And you can picture him.
No, right. Yeah. It's very much like that. And then 3 a.m. you bolt upright in bed and you're saying, it was Robert Cunningham.
Yeah.
So, right. You know, it's that very same thing. And when you're trying to think of a line, it usually just comes to me like the next day. And I encourage people to use their subconscious mind. And I'm no new age guy. I mean, I'm a regular guy as anybody, but it just does seem to work that way. You just, you know, think about it and then let it cook.
I'm trying to picture who Robert Cunningham was.
I'm just thinking about him being a regular guy.
Lard Bucket Bluegrass Band.
Oh, there you go. So what are some of the mistakes you see new writers doing time and time again in these seminars?
Mainly, I think that people in this age of the internet where you can do anything via email or Dropbox and Skype, the world is wide open. You can get Nashville studios like 515 to do your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you sing your own demos when you've got the world's greatest singers here, I would be shooting myself in the foot if I did that. Because I can sing, but I'm no singer. And, you know, if you can have the best in the world, why wouldn't you get them? I've been a staff writer for 30 years here in Nashville, and I've never once sang my own demo.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
So, when you can get the best, why would you? That's how I think about it.
Cheap. Being cheap, really.
Yeah, but are we shooting ourselves in the foot by our cheapness?
It's something to ponder.
It's something to ponder.
I mean, even if you could do and there's some great writers who are great singers. And, you know, I've written a lot of songs with writers who are great singers, and they'll sing the demo. But that's not up to me because I'm not. You know, it's not going to turn out as good as it could with a real pro singer.
Right.
Wow, great.
I thought it was kind of interesting. If I read this right, you tell me if I did or not, but I understand that you
boxers.
Okay, good. Good, good.
Was that I didn't
thank you. Stephen.
Did I overshare again?
No.
That's why we didn't come on last week.
You didn't know that Colin Ray had cut your song Love, comma me, until it was at like 33 on the charts. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. You'd mentioned that I was a guitar player, and I was. I kind of have these concurrent careers where I was playing guitar on the road with different people and songwriting too. And I was on the road with Skip when we wrote it, and then, you know, I came home for a while, and then I was going out with Linda Davis, and we were at doing some big show somewhere. I think it was with the Judds. And after the show, or between the two acts, we did a meet and greet, or she was, and I happened to be standing there. And I said, "Oh, Max T, I love your new song." I said, and this happened a lot back then because my dad would always have at least one or two in the charts, right? Mm-hmm. So I said, "Oh, you must be talking about my dad, Max T." And they said, "No, it's you." And somehow they knew, you know, between us. And I said, "Well, you know," he kept going on about it, and I hadn't heard anything about it. So when I got home, I called around, and sure enough, it was number 33 on the Billboard charts before I ever even knew it was cut.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's before the internet.
Yeah, the internet. Well, you can get it on your phone and say, "You're a liar."
Wow. Well, let's take another break. And again, thank our friends at Toyota of Cool Springs. Just a great bunch of guys over there, and they have a full service service department as well.
Yep.
And I actually got my first look at a 2015 Camry yesterday.
Oh, I've got my eye on one of those too.
Yeah.
Well, definitely, if you go over there, go check out Toyota of Cool Springs. Talk to George. He's the owner, and he's a great guy. And you can find him on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That, of course, is Diamond Rio doing The Way Your Love Makes Me Feel, which is a big old hit for them, and that was written by our guest here this hour, Max T. Barnes.
And Max does seminars. Matter of fact, you just mentioned this, but you just got back from like a month of doing seminars in Australia.
Australia, yeah. We'd planned five cities down there, and did I take over too soon? Was that a?
I was getting there.
Oh, sorry.
I was getting there. Oh. You ready for the? Here comes the money question, right? Tell us more about these seminars, and how can people get involved, Max T. Barnes?
Greg, you're going to have to school us on timing over here. yeah, so I was over in Australia doing seminars, and that was a lot of fun. It's very different down there, and everything's upside down, as you know. They're north to south, and they're south is north. My buddy over there, Lance. Hey, Lance, if you're listening.
Actually just messaged in and said, yes, they do know who Merle Haggard is down there.
Well,
so.
He didn't before I got there. Uh-huh. No, I'm just kidding. But he sent me he likes texting me pictures of 14-inch spiders. And, you know, he texted me a picture, like we see turkey and deer here in Nashville. But he's sent me a picture he saw on the way to work. He saw a kangaroo being strangled by a snake.
Yikes.
I mean, that's Australia. But what was the question about songwriting? Probably.
your seminar.
Now you're sound like Greg.
I know, right?
I think you have one coming up. Tell us about it and how can we get involved?
This is our kind of year-end seminar, and we're doing it right here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's going to be at Curb Record Studio. It's kind of been my home for a long time, and it's really comfortable there. And what it is, it's a seminar, and you can go to maxtbarnes.com and get your tickets there. And it's a all day seminar. It's like from 11 to 4, and there's I think we're having pizza. And Melissa Wald from MTSU is going to speak on copyrights and royalties and that kind of stuff. And it's I don't talk over people's head. It's just real comfortable, and I answer a lot of questions, and I tell them about writing lyrics and writing melodies and stuff. The way I do it, we don't diagram sentences and stuff.
It's
not like that. It's like, how did it feel to do what you did? How did it, how did it feel when you wrote this verse, or how you connect these lines? And, from what I understand, there's an actual mathematical computation, how to ride a bike, with all these symbols and.
Right.
But that's not how I do it. It's just like it's teaching somebody what it feels like to ride a bike. And that's the way I deliver it. So it's maxtbarnes.com. You can go there December 3rd at Curb Record Studio.
Have you ever discovered something that you just cannot teach as far as songwriting goes? I mean, people either have it or they don't.
Yes. I'm always fascinated by the gifts that we're given. If you grew up in the South or in church, you may know these as spiritual gifts. And we all have our own, and I don't think the Lord meant us to all have the same one. So, almost nobody has them all, but we all have some. Mm-hmm. So, we're all given our own gifts, and it's just dialing in on what you do and then find somebody opposite of you, I think, is the formula to having your best songwriting success.
I like that.
If we're going to use the riding the bike analogy, and if you need any other speakers, I could help. I could show people what it feels like to fall off the bike constantly onto gravel.
Wearing shorts.
Short shorts. What are some tips for actually getting songs heard and actually cut in this town?
Well, this is part of what I cover in the seminars, too. It's all about relationships. And, you see people in our age with their head in their phones or on the YouTube and stuff, looking at computers all the time. It really all does come down to how many people can you meet and how many people can you stay friends with. That's what this business is. It's a people business, and it always was. The more people you can know and actually have had shaken hands with them and engaged them, the better off you're going to be. Not just because, you're trying to get rich or write songs or whatever, but it's a human aspect too, You're going to be richer for that. So getting songs cut is always about relationships. And, you'll have a friend who you wrote with 4 years ago, and you wrote a rash of songs, and all of a sudden they're playing in a band with somebody who's, getting songs cut by so-and-so, and they call you up and say, hey, we need songs for so-and-so. That's how it is. And stuff that seeds you planted 4 years ago or a year ago will come back and bear fruit. It's about relationships.
Excellent.
I like that. I like that. Well, you seem to embrace technology as a performer and as a writer.
Absolutely, yes.
What are some of the most useful tools that you are using these days?
I was in the computer just itself, of course. And it kind of goes without saying, if you can shoot, move, and communicate, you can write songs. And I say that's what the military does. That's their things. If you're writing a song, you can move verses and stuff on a computer. You can email it. You can do everything on a computer. If you're writing with that one, you're kind of at a bit of a disadvantage, not because you're not going to write as good a song, so it's just harder. And I was in a co-write the other day, and my computer was being a jerk, and it just wouldn't let me into my master writer.
Oh, yeah.
And master writer does one thing that I love that I don't like to write without, and it's this rhymed phrases thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a song that, let's say the rhyme is night, mm-hmm. and you're looking for a rhyme that is my, let's say you're looking for something that ends with night, you can put in a word and it will find a whole phrase that ends with night or a rhyme with night, and it's a phrase you've probably heard, but you know there's probably 50 of them, and mm-hmm. it's just so easy. It's really a spark.
Hmm. Might I suggest you check out WikiRhymer, which is a online rhyming dictionary just for songwriters, created by songwriters and they have that.
Oh, really?
So next time your master writer goes down, check out WikiRhymer.
Very good. I sure will.
Do we charge him extra for that?
Yeah, I guess we do. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll send him an invoice.
So what about, but how about performing wise? You use technology when you're out performing as well.
I do. You and I just did a songwriters thing in
oh, that was
Smoky
you?
Mountains.
Oh, yeah.
So, one of the things I used up there was a thing called Voice Live 3, and TC Electronics makes it. And I love this thing. You know what it is? It's basically a harmony machine. You're saying, Max T, I don't care, because those things really stink. And they did used to stink. But this one, you plug your guitar into it or your piano, and it hears what you're doing, and it changes the scale of the
harmony
to what you're doing. It's amazing what it can do.
But your guitar needs to be in tune.
Because
I played with somebody recently, and it wasn't working out, and it was just because they needed to tune their guitar. Mm-hmm. It was.
You know what else will get you on those is if you're playing. If you're an old hack like me, I kind of
an old hack. Wait a minute.
I don't think so.
I have these cheats that I do like a G. I'll play it like this without playing that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't play that third, it don't know what you're saying. It'll go off scale. So you got to remember to play all the thirds.
The whole chord.
Yeah, the whole chord, not just the wash tub version of it.
Well, I was there with you at that show, and it did sound great, and it kind of encouraged everybody to kind of sing along too, which was kind of neat because we had a pretty good crowd there, and they of course knew every one of your songs. So this wasn't Ireland, you know.
Max,
they knew every one of them.
Max had a pretty good crowd there.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Way to burst my bubble there, pal.
Just saying. We got a couple more minutes. Talk about Max T, the guitarist. Were there lessons involved? Were you self-taught?
No, no lesson. Well, I did take one lesson.
Mm-hmm. And that's all you needed.
And the guy wanted me to learn how to read music, and I don't know. It's just not for me.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know how to read music.
Mm-hmm.
I can read a chart back and forwards, but it just wasn't for me. So I just went home and, woodshedded. And when I was 18, I was just 2 weeks out of high school, and I auditioned for a kind of a Holiday Inn kind of band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were desperate, and they hired me because they couldn't find somebody. So they hired me. It was a three-week sit-down gig in the middle of Nebraska. And after the first night, they knew that I was horrible.
Ah.
And but they were stuck with me. It was a three-week gig. So
right.
It was obvious that I was going to get fired. So I went back to the hotel room, and I just went at it like an animal. And I hung on to that gig for about a year.
Nice.
Until it was time to move on. But that was, feet to the fire kind of thing. And I just really, doing your homework, working hard, it really does pay off. Even like I'd say for songwriters who do live things, I would really encourage you to rehearse and rehearse and rehearse, because it's so much more fun when you go out there and you know what you're doing.
And you don't even have to think
you
about it.
You don't even have to think about it.
I think that's what Greg was saying in the last hour. Yeah,
sure.
Learn,
was.
Know your set.
Advice. Know your set. Yeah, whether it's a song or comedy or whatever.
Yeah, see, I'm just rehashing stuff from the last hour. So
that's all right. That's all right. You know, tell us about the time you didn't write with Harlan Howard.
Oh, why would you do that to poor Greg?
Oh, man.
All right, give us your website one more time.
MaxTBarnes.com.
Matter of fact, let's do it one more time.
MaxTBarnes.com. You can't miss it.
Love the sound of that. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us and for coming back and, you know, not being mad at us.
No worries, fellas. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right, go check out MaxTBarnes.com. Check out GregHall.com as well. And when you're done with that, go check out TheMusicRowShow.com. We've got a lot of great stuff there for you, some podcasts.
Big show coming up tomorrow, next week, too. It'll be a lot of fun.
Great. So we'll see you next week on The Music Row Show.